This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. This is Front Row on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Sharmila Ganesan. The latest play by Theatre Source called Matahari Jangan Tidur Nanti Hilang Belang has a Peribahasa-inspired title, a post-apocalyptic setting, and a story that is maybe Malaysian. The show is on from today, 29th of August, to the 1st of September at the Damansara Performing Arts Centre. And joining me today to tell us more is the play's writer and director, Arif Hamizan. Thank you for joining me, Arif.
Sure.
So, I think this is the first question I'm going to ask you. It's Matahari Jangan Tidur, but Tidur in the title is spelled with an E at the end. Am I saying it wrong? Is it supposed to be Tidur Re?
No, the original title was Matahari Jangan Tidur, Nanti Hilang Belang. Mm-hmm. But when I was texting the title to one of my collaborators, there was a typo. I accidentally put an E in it, and I kind of liked how it looked. It just read well. That's pretty much it.
So where does that title come from? Matahari Jangan Tidur Nanti Hilang Belang.
I think I've always been interested in Malay peribahasas. Mm-hmm. And it was an attempt for me, I think, to make my own. Mm-hmm. Something a little more surreal. Something playing with the language and the sound of the language. And we had a back and forth for about like a whole day. Just of random different sayings which we were making up, and that was what we chose.
It does have that old school feel to it, right? Mm. Because when I first read it, I kind of thought, wait, is this a real peribahasa? That kind of, it sounds kind of familiar. But what's interesting is that the play itself is apocalyptic, kind of futuristic almost. Yeah. Why that contrast between the title and the play itself?
I think something in the play that we were really exploring over the past 6 months was this idea of distortion. How perhaps the most we've been inundated with apocalyptic images, with, you know, Avengers and with climate change and things like that over the past 10 years. So that was at the forefront of our minds. And when you think about the apocalypse, you think about something world-changing where you're essentially entering a portal into another place. And thinking about it that way, yeah, that's why there was this distortion. It's this kind of mix of memory of things which might have been and how they might look like in the future.
So let's take a step back and maybe start with the most basic question, which is, what is the play about?
That's the most difficult question. Essentially, at its very core, it's about two individuals who are looking for each other. Mm-hmm. It takes place in some sort of dream world, and that's really what the play is about—just them trying to find each other.
So, dream world or futuristic world? Mm. I mean, what is the setting that we're talking about?
Our entry point, because we dealt a lot with Kiamat and this idea of what shape. The end of the world might take place and how we might exist after it. Mm. And what we have now settled on is this idea that it's almost as if, this is going to sound weird, but when you die and you wake up, it's as if you are dreaming. Mm-hmm. And your life that you live are the memories that you carry on into your dreams. Mm. In the same way that when you fall asleep and you hear someone say one word right before you just enter sleep, that somehow changes your dream.
Yeah. Then tell me about the characters, because for a story like this, it's then really the characters that will carry you through that tale, right?
Yeah. We've got two characters. They don't speak much. Mm-hmm. Half the play is without dialogue, verbal dialogue. Their names are Kay and Persephone. And if we're talking about their tracks, Persephone is this curious, kind of strong-willed female figure who is looking for something. And we see her looking for something, but she doesn't find it along the way. Kay, however, is trapped in this almost hell-like world, which is suffocating, where he's had to relive memories, almost as if, you know, that scene in Clockwork Orange where the eyelids... And he's also looking for something in the end. And in some form or another, they find each other. And that's as much as I can really tell you without spoiling much.
Okay, yeah. So I don't know whether this question that I'm about to ask you is going to veer into spoiler territory.
Sure.
But you said Persephone, and then you said hell, and then you said that she's a woman who's kind of young woman who's curious and looking for something. Am I drawing the dots? Am I drawing the lines?
That's a cool comparison. No, it's great. It's funny because all of these names and the title even came before we even came up with the story. I've always liked the name Persephone, and we just decided, okay, you're going to be Persephone. We don't know what you're going to do. And then we tried playing around with it. And of course, our minds go into like Greek myth and bringing Persephone into Hades and death. And it made sense. So there are links. I wouldn't say it's drawn entirely from, entirely inspired by myth. But I think there is that memory of it there.
So the basic idea of the play is that we are at some sort of end of the world scenario. Mm. And these two characters are, I mean, what exactly is happening to them?
Mm. So they may or may not be connected. They're in different spaces. Mm-hmm. And we see them inhabit these two different spaces. And in their separate spaces, things are happening to them. We see them struggling. We see them fighting through adversity. We see them striving for something bigger until they finally inhabit the same space.
So is it a Malaysian story at all?
I think anything which Malaysians make is a Malaysian story. but I think there was something that I've tried to do with my work is use Malay.
So yeah, it's not a completely Malay story, a play, but rather it's sort of Malay with bits of other languages.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. There's just it's if you were to walk into a mama or a coffee shop and you were to hear how it sounds like.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what I was trying to reproduce.
Right. Yeah. And why is it that you like writing in Malay, or rather this? Mm. I suppose this not like Atas Malay.
Sure.
Yeah. But in this sort of, I suppose, everyday language of Malaysia.
I didn't grow up in speaking Malay, and so when I first started learning Malay, I was very insecure about writing in Malay. But I find that because of my lack of familiarity with the language, there's a lot more freedom for me to explore it compared to when I write in English. Because you kind of see the quirks of it and different juxtapositions, which I feel like I've lost when it comes to writing in English.
So this is your second full-length production that you've written and directed.
Yes.
The first one was Api?
Yeah, Api Jangan Lupa Api.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So how do you think you've evolved from then to now?
Well, Api was more an exercise in trying to figure out if I could write and direct. So I had a couple of good friends and great performers, Claudia and Ali, with me, and only one person helping out with tech this time around. I brought in 10 people who I'm interested in and as performers and like a sound designer and a tech designer. So it was really trying to set the bar so high that I would fail. But in the trying to fail, we might find something pretty cool.
Mm.
Yeah.
And the tech in it, you know, because for a story like this, tell me about the setting. Tell me about what we'll see on stage.
We've got an original score, partly original because we were using some karaoke music. But Ian Francis, who is our musician, is composing as we are playing out the scenes.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll have this kind of dreamscape sound, but it's also percussive if you've seen the trailer. And then we have Brian Chung doing visuals, and we are using a lot of projections, webcams, to really push the boundaries of how we would perceive in the space. Because usually when you go to the theatre, there's only one thing to look at. And we're wondering if without investing heavily in LCD screens, we can have this sense of almost a cinematic experience, if that's possible.
So to achieve that sort of effect, then does it become quite a collaborative process then?
Oh, definitely. Like, I couldn't do this alone.
Mm.
And a lot of the ideas that you'll be seeing on stage are ideas which have been from my collaborators, for sure.
So then to get back to this, the question I started with earlier, what is the play about, right?
Mm.
Did you know at the beginning when you started what you were setting out to do with the story?
No idea. Yeah. This was a very unfamiliar process for myself and for everybody because we went in only with the title. And I just told them, you know, we're going to make something and we're going to see how it works out, which is why we gave ourselves 6 months to make it. We had actually written a completely different play about a month ago and I watched it in rehearsal and I didn't like it and we scrapped it and we just completely rewrote it.
And this is including the performers?
Yes.
Right,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So the performers themselves have been writing scenes as well.
Actually, who are the performers?
Ah, okay. If I can remember all of them, I hope I don't forget. There's Ali El Asri, Claudia Lau, Hannah Nadira, Milo Faik, Sandy Chu, Michael Chen, Kasi Azhar, Vishnu Varman. Oh God. Hui Yun and Nabil Zakaria.
Okay, but you said two characters.
Yeah.
So what are all the other performers doing?
So I also mentioned that the first half is very visual driven. It's a very ensemble piece in the sense that you will be seeing a lot of physical activity, physical theater pieces essentially on stage. In a way, I almost had to think of it as directing a dance piece because it was much more about rhythm than it was dialogue or linear narrative.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, at least for the first part.
And now that you've come to, well, you're pretty close to premiering the show, you know, are you surprised at what you've ended up with?
Yeah, for sure. I actually watched Magnolia the other day.
Yeah.
Paul Thomas Anderson. And it reminded me of how messy a collaborative creative process can be. But it's also a movie where at the end of the movie, spoiler alert, frogs fly down in everyone's
yes.
world. And I think that's very difficult to come across and to get people to believe in if you are just writing the script as it is.
Mm-hmm.
When you've got a whole team making something together, you make something much more fantastical and much more surreal. And that's really all I wanted to get out of this production.
Should we prepare for frogs?
No. No. I don't like frogs.
Okay, good. But what do you expect, or rather, what do you want the audience to take away from this show?
I think what I would like the audience, what I would want to do to the audience is to surprise and engage them at every turn. There are things which I, maybe because of my young age, have not seen on stage, which I've tried to do, and I hope that will be fun for the audience. I would also hope that there is an emotional connection, even if it doesn't make sense on a superficial level. I think what I'm trying to attack with this piece is that kind of emotional sense when you stand on top of a mountain and you look at the view and it's just beautiful mm-hmm. and there's just something about it which you love.
Is there a storyline or is it sort of quite conceptual?
There is a storyline. However, the way we've treated it is as if the audience has to reconstruct a memory, almost as if you're trying to remember a dream.
Mm.
So there are fragments. And it was a very conscious thing on our part to not make it so incoherent that the audience would just be left watching meaningless images.
Mm.
But I think we can take it. it's a challenge. I'm offering a challenge as well. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, Arif.
Thank you.
I've been speaking to writer and director Arif Hamizan about his play called Matahari Jangan Tidur Nanti Hilang Belang, which is on from today, the 29th of August, to the 1st of September at the Damansara Performing Arts Centre. Tickets are priced at RM68 and RM58 with concessions. For more information, go to dpac.com.my. If you've missed any part of this interview or any previous Front Row segment, you can download the podcasts on bfm.my, on our BFM app, and also on Spotify. You've been listening to Front Row on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.